Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis do return today. One of them will still be in connection to the tragic events and criminal events in Boston on Monday with the bombing at the Boston Marathon, but that'll be in the bad martini. The good martini today, Jim, it looks like the Democratic gun bill is not even really getting off the ground. Yes, they got their motion to proceed vote last week, but the vote that they thought would be one of the easier ones to get as compared to assault weapons ban or magazine capacity limits was the Toomey Mansion background check. This was supposed to be the issue that greased the skids for getting something done in the U.S. Senate, but now Joe Manchin himself saying today that he simply doesn't have the votes to get this done. Some of the latest to announce that they would not vote for this expansion of background checks, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska and Dean Heller of Nevada, and by most vote counting, those were pretty much necessary to have any chance of getting this through. So not only is Pat Toomey vindicated while perhaps getting some political capital out of this, at least for the moment, but you have to think that if this can't get done in the democratically controlled Senate, the things we really, really don't want to see coming down the pike here in terms of those other issues probably don't have much of a prayer at all.
It's perhaps a little premature to say gun legislation is doomed for the year. But if this could not get through with Manchin and Toomey on board, the odds of getting 60 votes for any other piece of legislation look pretty slim. Not to say there won't be consequence. You will see Toomey, you will see Manchin, you will see Bob Casey, the other Pennsylvania senator, a Democrat, all who previously were rated A by the NRA. I think these guys are going to get Bs at most the next time the NRA grades these candidates. And so these guys are not going, you know, there's going to be some bad blood amongst some gun owners. If you are a person who thinks that the bill, the background check provision was a bad idea, then this is good news for you. It will not be consequence. And if you are heartless and cynical, as I've been accused of being recently, and see this as a political ploy by Toomey to burnish his centrist credentials in the Philadelphia suburbs, well, I mean, let's cue up the Philadelphia Inquirer. The sensible, moderate Pat Toomey tried his very best to forge a bipartisan compromise, and it simply did not succeed. And there you go. And so now you cannot say that Pat Toomey is this unhinged, crazy right-wing maniac who likes to see terrible gun massacres. He did his very best. It did not succeed. And it's unlikely that any other senator will be more likely to forge a bipartisan compromise. I think it just kind of says that deep down, there are not 60 votes to pass gun legislation of any serious restriction or anything like the form. Like most people, you know, you saw the Saturday Night Live sketch. They kind of mocked this bill for not doing much. You have a very pro-gun control caucus that would like to ban assault weapons and I think probably de facto eliminate the Second Amendment. There are a whole bunch of folks who don't, and there are a whole bunch of red state Democrats who are afraid to put their names on even something like this. So with that cast of the Senate, you can't get 60 votes, and that is that. If you thought this bill was bad, then this is probably the best possible scenario. Those of us who kind of feel like a lot of this gun control talk has been, you know, feel good legislation, legislators trying to look like they did something, not necessarily more less likely to prevent any actual, you know, future gun massacres. Maybe it's time to move on with the nation's business and deal with problems that the Senate can deal with, since it's not likely to, you know, all the emotional appeals of Obama and invoking the Newtown victims, et cetera, isn't really enough to move the votes in the Senate.
On to the bad martini now, and onto Salon.com. Article by David Sirota. The title of the article is Let's Hope the Boston Marathon Bomber is a White American. And the point here is that he believes there is an issue of white privilege in this country. And if you're a white terrorist, a la Timothy McVeigh or some of these school shooters, you're also always described as a lone wolf. But if you are someone from an ethnic or religious minority, read radical Muslim, well, then an entire religion, an entire race of people is tarred by the actions potentially of one person. He goes on to say that this has been the most obvious in the context of recent mass shootings. In those awful episodes, a religious or ethnic minority group lacking such privilege would likely be collectively slandered and or targeted with surveillance or profiling or worse if some of its individuals comprised most of the mass shooters. However, white male privilege means white men are not collectively denigrated slash targeted for those shootings, even though most come at the hands of white dudes. Likewise, in the context of terrorist attacks, such privilege means white non-Islamic terrorists are typically portrayed not as representative of whole groups or ideologies, but as lone wolf threats to be dealt with as isolated law enforcement matters. Meanwhile, non-white or developing world terrorism suspects are often reflexively portrayed as representative of larger conspiracies, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So basically, he thinks there's a complete double standard here on terrorism, whereas I would point out, Jim, and I'm sure you will in a moment, that usually when radical Muslims commit terrorist attacks, they make it abundantly clear why they're doing such things. This guy's just throwing this out here, saying that we should apparently tar all white people whenever a white person commits a crime, regardless of their motivation behind it.
Yeah, I mean, if you're familiar with David Sirota, this is not all that shocking and surprising. I remember tangling with him back in 2006, him denouncing my book, I Was a Crazed Warmonger, et cetera, et cetera. I think over on Red State, they have video of him flipping out and just, you know, screaming at some public forum. So this is kind of par for the course for him. One of the things that's really kind of intriguing, and I'd really like to put to Sirota if he were, you know, heavily medicated and not, you know, restrained and not likely to jump up and scream, you know, crazy things. When he says, you know, after a jihadist Islamist terrorist attack, an Al-Qaeda terror attack, who comes out and says, we must blame all Muslims? I mean, you can probably find some yokel on the internet, but I mean, is there any public figure who has said, this is why we need to be wary of all Muslims? Your Muslim neighbor is likely an Al-Qaeda terrorist. Let's round him up. Let's do it. Like, no, nobody really says that. There's this perception that America is like teeming with xenophobia and we're one step away from emulating, FDR, in rounding up an ethnic group and putting them in camps because we deem them threats. But it doesn't seem to happen, and certainly no lawmaker says it, and certainly no, I don't think any public commentator, columnist, person of really significant public importance just goes out and articulates out and out raw xenophobia and saying, you know, we've got to do away with the Muslims or anything like that. The world has a billion of them. You're going to have good ones and bad ones. We shouldn't be all that surprised by it. In the case of the militias that he's talking about, I mean, McVeigh had his one partner there. Eric Rudolph acted largely alone. I'd have to go back and review the court cases. One of the more intriguing bits of reporting since the terrible events of Monday was BuzzFeed called up a bunch of militia groups. I didn't even know they were in the phone book, but they are, and basically said, what do you think of Boston? They all denounced it. There's a range or a spectrum of the militia groups, and some of them are just kind of your garden variety survivalists who kind of think that society is going to collapse any day now, and that's why they have their little compounds. There are folks who are vehemently anti-government. But, you know, if you have a real anger against the government, that, you know, the federal government is out to get you, the Boston Marathon doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense as a target. We don't know this. We will see how this shakes out. Eric Rudolph blew up the Olympics, so it's sometimes, you know, some people will just pick targets because they just want to hurt a lot of innocent people. But when you look at this target, you look at the innocent people, the children who were killed and maimed by this, this doesn't say, I'm angry at you, American government. This says, I'm angry at you, America and American people, which is one of the reasons why it doesn't fit the organized militia mentality. Maybe you can find some rogue militia guy who believes that the whole country is so corrupt and tainted by, you know, by the sins of our government, et cetera, that everybody, including 8-year-old kids, deserve to die. But at that point, I think you're dealing with a lunatic. Whereas the idea of a person who wants to say, well, across the American spectrum, all of us deserve to die for our role in the terrible thing that is America, well, that sounds much more like jihadist mentality, you know, the idea there are no innocents. So I think the Sirota column makes explicit what's going through quite a few people's heads right now, which is that, boy, I hope I can pin this on my opponents. Boy, I hope I can point at this to the other side. And on the one hand, it's really disgusting and horrifying. On the other hand, you almost wonder if this is some people's coping mechanism, that the idea that we live in a world where one or two or we don't know how many random people can just kill lots of people, maim lots of people, ruin so many lives in an instant. And, you know, without any warning, there's nothing we can do to prepare for this. It really makes us feel scared and powerless. So for David Sirota, blaming Republicans and blaming the right wing is kind of his way of coping with this great trauma. This doesn't mean he's any less of a jerk or a lunatic, but I just kind of think that's where he's coming from on this. And, you know, we may find it disgusting, but I think it's just part of human nature to try to say, oh, this is the cause of all the people I've always hated. And this just, you know, this terrible event just proves me right, which is a unfortunate, but I think very common human reaction in circumstances like this.
Probably. Best Twitter reaction I saw was David Sirota hopes the bomber is a white American. I hope the bomber is brought to justice. So
very well said.
Pretty good contrast there. Wish I had done that one. Anyway, on to the crazy martini now. And you may remember from a couple of weeks ago, Jim and I debating the merits of nominating Mark Sanford to go back to Congress in South Carolina's 1st Congressional District. And, well, he's already become the nominee now and actually had been at the time of that conversation. So coming up on May 7th, he's got a head-to-head matchup with Elizabeth Colbert Bush, the sister of Stephen Colbert. For the most part, as Jim pointed out, voters seem to either think that his Sanford's dalliance with the Argentinian woman back when he was governor of South Carolina is either a major issue or it's not. But now the issue has come back because apparently Sanford is facing trespassing charges for going onto his wife's property without her permission, which was part of the divorce settlement. This is back in February. He was caught using his cell phone as a flashlight as he was leaving the property. Mrs. Sanford, Jenny Sanford, says that she did not make this public, although she is pressing the trespassing charges against him. Jim, obviously, this is not going to be helpful towards his campaign, but does the fact that his activity in recent months on this issue that we thought was at least settled a couple of years ago, how big of a difference is this going to make?
I think it's safe to say this is troubling. Let's get all the proper caveats out of the way. This is only an allegation. He'll have his day in court. We'll see if actually this allegation is true. Kind of intriguing to see Jenny Sanford saying that she did not want this to go public because court documents are public records. You know, anybody can access them. Anybody can look at them. And once you do this, the odds of something like this coming out are pretty darn likely. If indeed this is true, it's troubling. Not so much that this means that, you know, if elected, Sanford would be a terrible congressman. Just that clearly this guy's got some sort of bizarre blind spot. I think, you know, a couple of people kind of chuckled and shifted uncomfortably in their seats upon the news that he had asked Jenny Sanford to manage his campaign when he began this congressional district. As much as I have really hoped to see that the story of Mark Sanford has a happy ending and that he goes on to become a successful congressman, well representing the interests of this district, you look at things like this and wonder if I just kind of wonder if there's a certain amount of just something where Sanford doesn't quite understand how people will react to his actions. Because if you really need to get to your ex-wife's house, call first. That would seem to be a fairly basic, smart move to make. He's got to know this is a very loaded topic in his campaign and just a very troubling judgment if the allegations are accurate. We'll see how this shakes out. For now, the Elizabeth Colbert Bush campaign says they have no comment. They may very well recognize that with this being in the news, they don't have to comment. The story by itself is you know, frustrating and damaging enough.
Well, yeah, the old adage goes, if your opponent is self-destructing, the best thing you can do is get out of the way. Whether he is self-destructing, we'll see that on May 7th. The difference is that the case starts on May 9th. So by the time we know what actually happened with this story, the verdict will be in from the voters of the 1st Congressional District down there. So another interesting turn to an already fascinating political story. So, Jim, we'll keep watching that one, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.